Ambulance emergency. Is the patient breathing?
Ambulance.
Okay, what's happening? What's happening there? Okay, I've got your address there. Okay, so what's happening? Tell me exactly what's happening.
Chest pains.
Okay, just take a deep breath, sir. I can get you some help. I just need to know what's happening.
My chest.
You're breathing.
I'm trying.
Trying to breathe.
Yes.
Okay.
Please hurry
up. We're gonna come. You're on a high category. We're gonna come as quickly as we can. We're on blue lights and sirens.
Hello, welcome to Think Aorta's Patient Stories. My name's Simon Rose. I'm a lecturer at the University of East Anglia. Today, we're going to be joined by two very special guests on our first ever podcast. I'd like to introduce you to Tony and his wife, Julia.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, that's the intro's done.
That's the intro's done, yeah.
So, to kick us off then, really, Tony, I'd like to start with you. Could you just tell me a bit about your background, really, before you had an aortic dissection?
I was working in an engineering company before that. I was a driver for altogether 17 years. And then before that, done various other jobs. And then I had 5 years as a water bailiff and wildlife warden, doing guided walks, children's school parties and whatnot, on a reservoir which is under 92 acres, 4.5 miles all the way around.
Would you say you're quite active then in your job?
Yeah, because basically I used to do a lot of walking.
Yeah.
The job that I had on the reservoir was meant walking, but I used to enjoy walking anyway.
Yeah.
You know, as long as I've got a dog, I can walk miles. It's good company a dog is.
Yeah. So what I want to do then really is to bring you to the moments of your dissection.
Yeah.
So can you talk to me a bit about what kind of happened? When was it? What can you remember from that time?
The bang, the pop, when it went, and not being able to breathe.
What were you actually doing when you had when you felt
trying
that?
To move my settee?
Trying to move your settee, yeah.
Trying to lift something.
By yourself, let me guess.
Oh yes,
yeah.
But during the week at work, I'd noticed something was wrong. I didn't connect it with it until I looked back on what I could lift and what I couldn't. And being heavy lifting most of my life, I was a coalman when I was 14. I used to carry 100 weight, like it was, at first it was a lot, but then it became not a lot. So, you know, lifting during work time when I was at Daniel Engineering Company, it was not, you know, it's nothing really.
No.
Just means a bit of hard work.
But this time round, you were moving the couch and all of a sudden,
boom,
this pop.
And I'd been watching something on the telly and it was, I don't know if I'd been laughing a lot or what, but and I went, just lifted and bang, it went.
And can you describe the moments after that popping or that kind of that incident? What were your feelings? Was it so just intense pain?
Intense.
Yeah.
You can't describe it. I've been told, somebody said to me, oh, if it goes again, it'll feel like an anvil on your chest. It didn't.
Mm.
It felt like somebody had torn something in my chest. But it was pain that I can't imagine. I can't really describe it. It's if it's any pain you can actually describe, it's like tenfold.
Yeah. So just the kind of severity is what you remember from that time.
And the thing I remember the most is not just that, was the fact it takes your breath. Imagine holding your breath and you're just about to let your breath out and then somebody puts their hand over the mouth so you can't breathe anymore.
Mm.
And then you start panicking.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to happen. Yeah, I thought, you know, as I was going down, am I going to die here?
But you were alone. It's obviously
alone, yeah.
Yeah, you screamed out for help effectively, but then realised
just screamed out, no. Never screamed out for help. Just screamed out, no. Because I think I'd been stubborn.
Yeah.
No, you know, and Then I screamed out Jew's name. Obviously, Jew wasn't there because she was at work.
Mm.
And that's when I was on my own and phoned up the ambulance and say for 18 and a half minutes, I was fighting, as far as I was concerned, for my life.
Yeah.
Because since then, I've learned that they would have had a job finding what it was.
Yeah.
As it happens, when we got to hospital, they haven't got a clue what it was because the pain had moved from my chest to my stomach, just below my solar plexus. So I could have died.
So going back to the call, I remember the first time I listened to the call, there was two things that really stuck out for me. One was the fear in your voice. You could obviously, even in the audio recording that I heard, you could tell that there was this sense in your voice that something was seriously wrong.
Yeah, I thought I was dying.
Yeah, and I think that actually comes across quite, you know.
Yeah, because it's your heart. It's like I've said before, you know, people, you it's what you can't see. Things can happen, but if it's your heart, you don't know what's going on.
Mm.
You know, and it was my heart. As far as I was concerned, I was having a heart attack.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to die. I couldn't breathe, hit the floor. But like I said, fortunately for me, I was able to get my breath back.
Yeah. So obviously on the call, there was that element of fear. You could hear that you were breathless as well. But I think the other thing that what I really kind of felt from the call is the call handler that you spoke to, John, was a real calming influence on.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. I could sense that, you know, that person, having that person with you helped with the isolation of maybe the fear of that incident of being at home alone a little bit.
Yeah, he sort of brought things in to annoy me more than anything, and that kept me awake.
Mm. So how long did that feel like? So obviously in the recording, you see how long it takes from the recording and to when the ambulance arrives. But in the moment, did that feel like hours? Did that feel like
days?
Yeah, felt like days.
Yeah, and I think that was also because I was getting very impatient.
Mm.
And I think that's where my impatience has come from in me towards my PTSD.
Mm.
Some of the impatientness I've got there. And that's probably what some of it's come from. Because as my wife will tell you, my patience isn't like it used to be.
No.
And when you think you're dying, you want them there then.
Yeah, of
course. You want them there before it happens.
You want them there like in an instant. Yeah.
Well, the other side of the room, just outside. Oh, it's happened. Quick, get in there.
What we find in the ambulance, especially in my career there's when someone turns up in green, even if they're not a paramedic, even if they're like an ambulance assistant, there's this calm that comes with it, isn't it? That enters the room with the uniform. And so that they might be a community first responder or an assistant. Doesn't necessarily mean they're a paramedic, but it's what you associate is help has arrived.
Yeah.
Did you feel like, so in terms of, obviously you said the pain, but did you feel like clammy? Were you sweating? Or, I mean, how did it feel to be going through that?
I wasn't
moments?
There.
Really?
I was like in a different world.
You were like out with it.
Yeah, it was, I knew what everything was going on around me, but I think it was the sheer shock.
Yeah.
The shock of the pain, you see, people think it's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to have an heart attack. I'll live for years. But it's like when it's the trauma. It was a sheer shock of it happening, and I couldn't believe what was happening.
Yeah.
Along with the pain on top of the pain as well. I'm like, what the hell is happening? Yeah. And then the thing called operation in my head, which is another one. How bad is it? Is it going to be a plaster and send me back home or a couple of tablets?
Yeah.
You know, as you do.
Well, no one prepares you for this stuff. Like, no one tells you that morning just to let you know.
Yeah, you're going to have an aorta dissection.
Yeah.
And you're going to have major heart surgery.
Yeah. So all this stuff is happening live, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's like overwhelming. Like
it is.
Yeah.
Very overwhelming. And like you say, it's 6.5 hours, a 6.5 hour op.
So if we take it back, say you're in the ambulance. Can you remember anything from the ambulance journey?
Basically, like I said, my wife, Jew, we sat there in the ambulance. I think they were making sure, I don't know why they sat there, but my neighbour walked by and I shouted him because the side door was open. I says, and he said, "Oh, Tony, what are you doing in now? I'm having an holiday." Anyway, he says, I said, "Can you go and get Joe?" And he says, "Yeah, I'm off." And he went. And then he went in to say to Joe, what did he say to you?
Oh, do you know Tony's sitting in the back of an ambulance?
Oh, was that the only information he gave you?
Yeah.
Oh, right. That sends your anxiety spiking, oh, yeah. Doesn't it? Yeah.
So Joe came back and I heard this knock on the back of the ambulance door and little door, the door opened and you've got my husband. And she says, first thing she says, what's the matter then? And I turn around and said, it's my heart. And Tracy says, we're not sure yet.
Yeah, we just know he's not well, basically, yeah. Isn't it?
And then she said, have I got time to go and get changed? So this says, yeah, you'll be all right if you're not too long. And I think one of the most heartwarming things was when she went in, they'd moved the settee, and where I'd gone down, the dog we got, we'd only had her 3 weeks, she was lying down where I'd gone down and crying.
Yeah.
So she picked up on it.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, it was, and like I said, we went off, drove off. It wasn't a blue light. And I said about my pain. So she gave me, was it paracetamols first?
Yeah.
Paracetamols.
Yeah, probably normally start you on paracetamol. Yeah.
And then it got worse. And was it ibuprofen then, babes?
Sorry for that. So sometimes ibuprofen, if not, they would give you morphine.
Couldn't give me morphine
I think he had all three.
Yeah. Yeah, potentially.
Then they said to me, what's the pain like now? 1 to 10. I said, about 20, because it was getting worse.
Yeah.
And
so even the time that the ambulance had arrived and then treat you.
Tracy just said, well, we'll give you one. And she gave me some morphine. And that's when I started feeling sick.
Yeah.
And then I says, I'm going to be sick. He says, hang on a minute, let me get you something too late.
Yeah.
And you can imagine what that were like.
So that can be quite the case for most people, especially if you get a decent dose of morphine. Most people then go on to later say, well, I can't take morphine because it makes me feel sick. So, yeah. So
well, it took for the time being, it just nulled the pain.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, what am I on next week, you know, Tom? And my mind was... I mean, we got to the hospital and I don't know whether I'd passed out at all. But I can't remember. Vaguely, I remember going from the ambulance into Resus.
And so then you felt the cold or something like that?
Yeah, that's what you normally know, the movement.
No, it was red hot. It was,
oh, was it? Was it during the summer?
Yeah, it was July.
Ah, okay.
And it was literally red hot. All the windows were open, everything. Yeah.
It could have been the movement.
Yeah, yeah.
Because going forward and then the ambulance reversing back.
Yeah.
And then they took me into this little cubicle and sat there. I didn't know, like I say, what day it was.
There for about 3 hours.
So when you got into the hospital, was that how long?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that was casualty. That was casualty.
In the emergency department. Yeah.
Juice filling in better than I can. Yeah. I thought they were trying for four and a half hours.
It was sort of perhaps 2.5, 3 hours in casualty.
Mm.
Then they moved you to another bit.
Yeah.
Where you actually got looked at.
Oh, okay. So obviously all this time is, you know, quite a considerable time, 3 or 4 hours.
This lasted till about 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then when they started poking around my bowels, because I thought my
so
bowels
that was their burst. Early impression was that they felt that actually...
Because it was moved.
Yeah.
Pain had, well, I turned around and said to it, hurts here.
Yeah.
And the thing
so
is,
they're thinking of abdominal related issues rather than chest related issues.
And when they started poking around my bowels, I turned around and says, it's my heart.
Yeah.
I said, the pain start, you know. I said, look, it's my heart. It's not. And in the end, I think, like I said, I must have been getting a bit nasty. Because in the end, he says, look, we've tried that. Let's just give him, he keeps telling us it's up there. We'll give him an x-ray on his chest. And I must have passed out at one point because I woke up and there must have been the movement of the trolley. And I was in the x-ray department.
Yeah.
And I went to move and this lady says, stay still. Can you please stay still? You'll be all right. Just calm down. And I stayed still. And then that's when all hell broke loose.
Mm.
When they found that there was a cloud on one side of my chest.
Right.
And like this staff nurse told us, that'd be the bag filling up with blood.
Yeah.
She said, eventually you would have drowned on your own blood.
Mm.
Well, that wasn't nice. Basically, he's smiling.
I mean, that is the, yeah. So, because we wouldn't normally to diagnose a dissection, is an x-ray is not normally kind of first line recommended, but often patients will get an x-ray before they get a CT.
Yeah, they do it automatically at Glenfield. Yeah.
So that's obviously, it's interesting that it must have been so substantial on the x-ray that then they're
cloud.
Like,
there was a cloud there.
Yeah, because sometimes the x-rays can actually be normal.
Yeah, literally.
So you go from x-ray, then you get a CT?
They decide, well, they sent for an emergency consultant that, because it's down on my records, and who specialised in that area or something.
Yeah.
And she diagnosed something wrong. So they gave a CT scan. They contacted Glenfield, and Glenfield says, give him another CT scan and get him over here.
Yeah.
There's an ambulance already waiting for me. And then that was fun, because when the turnaround said, we're going to move you from trolley to trolley, and I went to move, I got told off very severely.
So how many hours is this then since you were at home?
4.5.
No.
No,
we're
longer than
that. We left our house about, I don't know, 11.
Yeah.
We got to Glenfield about half four-ish, somewhere around there. Tipping point on the dollar. That's all I remember.
Tipping point on the
dollar.
So it's that early evening tea time.
I think I left you about 4:30.
Yeah, so we're now a few hours down the line, aren't we? And they've kind of just started to pick up that, you know, they think it's
a dissection. Well, I got a phone call at home at 8 o'clock saying they was going into theatre.
Okay.
And then they explained aortas and all this, and it just went straight over the top of my head.
Yeah, you're like that. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, I've got a clue what that's about. And then
did you, even though you didn't understand what an aortic dissection was, did you understand the seriousness of the, obviously, the call?
I didn't.
No.
No, the only reason I knew was the lady that used to take me to the hospital after that, she was a nurse.
Mm.
And I told her what they told me, and she actually told me what it was.
Oh, okay. And so said about how serious.
Yeah. I then knew how serious it was.
I didn't realise how serious it was until I was anaesthetised.
Yeah.
I did, when that bloke turned around and said, the paramedic, which I told you on that, he's got an aneurysm on his heart. It didn't click, but there again, I was drugged up.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't realise how serious it all was until that needle went in my hand.
And you're going into theatres, pretty much.
Yeah, I knew were these big black doors.
Yeah. At the point of no return, you're going into theatres. You understood it was quite serious.
Yeah, that's when my heart started racing, and I was fighting to stay awake.
What you were saying about your heart rate just before going into theatres is interesting, because obviously what we try and do is to keep you as relaxed as possible, because any extra kind of strain on the aorta could potentially make it worse. So the advice that I always give our students here is about, you know, trying to calm the patient, obviously looking at, you know, managing the pain, because we're not necessarily trying to take the pain from a 10 out of 10 to a 5 out of 10. Mm. We're trying to actually lower the body's response.
Yeah.
So the heart rate, the blood pressure.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that you obviously, by having that kind of, you know, feeling that, oh, my heart rate's gone up, is literally probably the worst thing that they probably wanted to happen. Let's get him to sleep quickly. So just going back, so you obviously, you've gone into surgery. How long roughly was the surgery, Julie? You might be able to...
Six and a half hours.
6.5 hours for this surgery. It's quite a long time. And for you being... were you at home this time?
I was in bed.
You're in bed.
I went to sleep.
Oh, what, straight to sleep?
Yeah, because at the time, I don't think I did actually realise
how serious it was.
So I just went to bed.
Yeah.
I thought they'll ring me in the morning.
Yeah. He'll be all right.
Yeah.
I told Tony, he'll be all right.
Flesh wound.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Flesh wound.
Yeah. He'll walk it off in a minute. Yeah.
Well, I had that many issues with my mother in hospitals and getting phone calls at ridiculous times of the
becomes
night.
The norm just, a little bit.
Yeah. You just sort of...
She was worried.
Accept it and get on with it.
Yeah.
She was worried.
I was worried,
of course. But was tired
at
the same time.
I'm not a panicky person. I don't panic at all.
So you then, obviously, the 6.5 hours in, you're now obviously out of surgery. So you were out of it for a while, I would assume.
Two days.
Yeah. And so the days after that, so you know, you've kind of out of the comatose state, you're getting more and more lucid, but still probably sleeping a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite as coherent as now, I say.
No, I'm very coherent now.
Yeah. Okay, well, I assume you'd be a bit less coherent a couple of days after your major surgery. Yeah. What can you remember from them kind of days immediately after, as you're gaining more and more of your kind of lucidness and you're feeling, feeling a bit more
I just used to lie there and watch the nurses and what's going on and watching everyday life.
Yeah.
This lovely nurse called Chloe. bless her, Mad Chloe. And she knows I call her Mad Chloe. She said, Tony, do you want me to give you a shower? Because I hadn't had a shower off, obviously.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, yes, please. And I went, she says, well, you go in the shower room. She says, I'll be in a minute. And I took my clothes off, looked at myself in the mirror, and that's it. I just burst out crying.
Is that when you obviously see your obviously kind of scar and all
seen,
its, you know.
Seen this bloody great zip down, down your front. And that started me off.
Yeah.
But I didn't know why. That just started the crying off, but I started crying every day after.
Well, that probably actually makes it very real, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The fact that someone has literally been in your chest.
The thing is,
like,
I couldn't shut it all. Like this. I mean, I can shut this zip off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was one of them, you know, but. And then I had a guy called Richard. He looked after me.
Mm-hmm.
The individual, Richard was, I mean, he did all the jobs besides, but his main job was keeping an eye on me, along with Mad Chloe.
Yeah.
Was literally keeping an eye on me. And there was another couple that came, you know, but they were good.
So what are we now, kind of like a week in, 10 days in, do we think, at this age?
About a week.
Yeah. The first week I was in the first bay.
Mm.
And then what they do, they move you into the next little bay. When you're a bit further away, and then eventually they moved me into Ward 34.
Yeah,
and we all loved that because it had got aircon with the heat.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, Ward 34. Yeah, it got red hot summer. Wow. You got aircon.
Yeah,
and that was interesting. Like I say, that was nice, but and it just
kept him in longer because of this infection.
Yeah,
yeah. So you were there 3 weeks in total.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so you were there 3 weeks. You then. Talk to me about the day you got discharged. Did you feel ready to, you know, because it's a major surgery. This is, you know, cardiothoracic surgery.
I was ready the day I turned around and said, can I get up and go to the toilet?
4 days later.
Yeah.
There's
a difference between being ready and wanting to leave, isn't there? So did you feel, you wanted to leave, but were you ready?
I wanted to go home.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be in there.
You're fed up of the hospital stay.
Yeah, I love hospital food.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's controversial.
Yeah, I absolutely love the food. We actually go for a meal occasion, don't we, in the hospital? Nice. No, it's like I say, it was how the old. There's a few people you meet in there, but yeah, when I was crying all the time, that didn't do me any good.
No.
And the week following you're up and you have to go toilet, that is a trauma on its own.
Yeah.
Because it's a different end of your body. And, you know, believe you me, it's not very nice. Because there's a lady, two ladies present. Well, she knows what it's all about. But because of the lady over there, I don't want to go into too much detail.
No. But we discussed previously about you kind of losing that dignity and independence to be able to do this stuff, which is normal to be able to do. You know, and you have that kind of taken from you, don't you? You then need help and support. And,
yeah.
And how that makes you feel psychologically as well.
I think this for cleaning yourself, I think they should supply some type of thing where you can actually clean yourself.
Yeah.
Because it does take away your dignity.
Mm.
I my time in hospital wasn't brilliant.
No.
No.
So let's then think about, so you've been discharged. How did you get on at home then? First early days, okay, the hospital's not here anymore. I don't have the nurses.
Thing is, Jew would have preferred to have stayed with me all the time. Even now she wants to.
Yeah.
Jew's
like,
No, do she won't do that. She keeps saying that. And I said to her, if we had the money, you could stay at home and look after me, because sometimes I'm not in the right frame of mind.
Did you feel like you had support when you left hospital and went home?
Not really.
No. What, like, so there was no follow-up or...?
We had the people who came and changed, because we went home with the vac thing on.
Yep.
They used to come in and
so
change
that.
Your
community
nurse.
Team or district nursing team, yeah.
Yeah, they did that, but otherwise not really.
But your aortic health and care?
Nothing.
And then, like, we've talked quite a lot around how you've been dealing with it with the months and years that followed. Obviously, you know, this is what we're talking about there is like 3 or 4 weeks after surgery. But this is, like we said earlier, is an ongoing process, isn't it? It's not, you don't get 5 weeks and go, oh, I'm done now. I'm the old Tony before surgery. It's a process of, okay, every day is going to be different.
Yeah, I'm not the old Tony.
No.
I was before. I'm a different person. Your life changes.
Yeah.
Completely.
So in terms of like your health now, do you feel anxious now around your health and in terms of your aorta and how has that changed your day-to-day life as an individual then?
I don't walk anymore.
No.
It won't go far. It won't, it takes the dog around the block. I mean, won't go where there's no houses, won't go shopping on his own.
Yeah.
Won't go shopping on his own anyway. But
is that because you don't want to be isolated, do you think then?
It's been on my own before.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
it's the worst feeling.
Brings it back to obviously when that moment you were on your own.
Yeah.
You, nobody else about.
No. No.
And I think that's what the bugbear is.
Yeah.
I was on my own. And it's, you can't, that's where that YouTube thing's helped. Because that's somebody on their own. I'm thinking that person is somebody else, not me. But that is somebody on their own.
Oh, so if you, when you hear your recording of the
callback, I'm starting to make it as somebody else.
Yeah.
Because talking about it like that is better for me. This is why I'm a lot better than what I have been.
Yeah.
I'm not so upset. It's basically, I'm trying to, if you think about it, is that's somebody on their own that is struggling for their life.
Yeah.
It's easy for other people to understand what you've been through. And that has helped no end.
So it's like making it more kind of objective rather than subjective.
I'm not on my own no more.
No. Julia, just obviously we talked about how Tony feels around health anxiety. How do you feel around, obviously, Tony's health now and how it's obviously you are a constant support, but do you worry about his health?
Not so much his health, his state of mind.
Okay, so his physical is different to his mental health potentially,
Yeah, his mental health is a lot worse than his physical. He gets a lot of pain in his chest.
Yeah.
Which
we tend to put down to anxiety a lot of the time.
Yeah, which can cause physical chest pain.
I mean, we've looked at Dr. Google, as everybody does, you know.
The thing is, the chest pain thing, I think we've just hit the nail on the head, haven't we?
You suffer a lot from panic attacks.
Mm. Yeah.
Not panic attacks, anxiety.
Yeah.
Which, once it gets in there, it gets there.
Oh, yeah, it can be crippling.
Yeah.
Can't it? You know, it can be literally.
It took us a long while to work out what they were.
And then Kirsty found it, didn't she?
Yeah.
She noticed I get headaches and I get neck pain. I get pains down my arm.
Is Kirsty one of the people who is at the
chiropractor? She's private.
Yeah.
And it cost us 40 quid for that. So that's...
Yeah.
And I get pains down this side of my chest. When it starts in one place, just there.
Yeah.
We think, I think, excuse me, one of the wires is twanging one of the nerves. And she also put it down to scar tissue, didn't she?
Yeah, and that can be a big problem after surgery. It's one of the ongoing.
Thing is, though, there's not enough help. Like, it needs a chiropractor, you've got to pay for it yourself.
Yeah.
Psychotherapist, you've got to pay for it yourself. If you've got loads of money, then fine.
Yeah. So when we look at the support after, you know,
it's not very good.
The surgical team did a great job fixing the problem, but that doesn't then sort.
That's one problem sorted.
Yeah. We had the best.
Yeah.
I had the best in my area. Mm. You know, he's one of the top in the world. I had him operate on me, but when it comes to all the other things,
if you don't work, I mean, I work full time, but I mean, I work in a shop.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not retire.
Especially with the cost of living at the minute.
Exactly. Like,
it's all this additional. I think what, for me, it's less maybe looking about dissection as a kind of event at the time, but more of an ongoing thing, isn't it?
Because
your life has now changed, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Fundamentally.
It's totally different now.
Like, as a paramedic, my job is to get you to the hospital
and
give you the best chance of getting to that surgical table. Obviously, the team at the hospital then do the surgery, but actually what we're seeing to be lacking is then the after bit, don't we? And that seems
it's
to
like
them.
It's like trying to claim benefits. It's a minefield.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like I said before. You just don't get the backing you should get.
Mm.
You know, it's.
It's like you say, the physical bit, but the mental bit's a lot harder.
I'm still broken.
For anyone who makes these policies, or anyone who you know can put in these infrastructures, what can you take from your story that would give someone like an MP, you know, what it's like to. To have these issues in front of you.
Talk to these people.
Talk to the Think Aorta.
Yeah.
Basically, if you've got problems, like you said, you've had one, the best people help you if you've had an aorta is go through Think Aorta.
What have they really done to help you then? Why would that be your
There's been somebody there.
Yeah.
If you want to talk to somebody, there's somebody there to talk to. And I think they're going in the right direction to help. You know, but like you were saying about having somebody that can talk to on a phone, because not everybody can use a computer. But they're always willing to talk to you on a computer, but not always available to get people on the phone. I think that's the only thing that's missing.
Yeah.
Have a phone if people will do that. Just ring up and get some advice.
Yeah.
Most of it's done on computer, am I right?
Yeah, I think there's a Facebook Buddies group I think they use quite a lot, isn't it? And that's a really... I think a lot of people do use it, but yeah, there might be people who actually just want to ring as well.
Yeah, and talk. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
You know. But other than that, yeah, these guys...
Yeah, so support is there, help is there.
Help is there.
But it's just seeking it out, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when we first started, we were doing our own thing, like we're doing a thing for PTSD, which you're aware of. And then you found them, and they've been great.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I'm glad they helped you, because obviously, like you said earlier, like it's not an easy ride in any... In any sense of the word. So if anyone can help it, you know, they really...
They will also help push you in the area that you need to go.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're like.
I think sometimes just literally just having a person to talk to as well, even if they're not an expert, it's just someone to share that story with, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's to me, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Having somebody to talk to.
No, I agree. Thank you guys for coming in. It's been really great to see you. And I really appreciate you coming in and sharing this this story, which I appreciate can be quite a difficult one to share. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Okay. If you'd like to hear more patient stories, please join us again next time. Thank you.